circus humor and good cheer.
Come, my love, and lay there. Loose the ribbon from your hair, and while you let her take your rest.
The Woods Tea Company, February 7th in Stowe. For tickets, visit sprucepeakarts.org.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Condon. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. It's Friday. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. We're broadcasting live, as we do on Fridays, from the State House in Montpelier. Coming up on the program this morning, we're going to be chatting in our second hour this morning. We'll talk with Governor Shumlin. Later this hour, we're going to talk with the new commissioner of the Department of Children and Families. Ken Schatz will join us. We'll talk a little bit about the report that came out, talking about a new focus that the department needs to take when it comes to protecting children. So that'll be coming your way in about 15 minutes here. We'll take your phone calls throughout the program. We'd love to hear from you. 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Before we get started here, let me just take a moment. I really want to express some real thanks to many of you out there over the past 3 days who made the effort to stop by and say hello to us and hello to me up at the Vermont Farm Show. It is really one of my favorite events of the year. It's an event where the feedback that we get is just really overwhelmingly positive. It really is, you know, the kind of fuel that you need to kind of keep going, and I really greatly appreciate it. And, you know, one of the nicest things about the Vermont Farm Show is that, you know, people will frequently come up and say something nice about the station, something nice about this program, and just turn around and walk away. And they're not looking for anything. It's just really marvelous. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. Let's get right down to business this morning. We're hopefully going to be joined by Senator Tim Ash, but, you know, road conditions being what they are, who knows? Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott is joining us because, you know, Phil Scott can basically drive on anything.
Well, Senator Ash did have a little bit of a problem with his vehicle in the last week or so. He was in an accident.
I heard about that. Yeah.
So, in fact,
I heard about that within about an hour of it happening. And he guess he got his back window kind of popped out.
I may have to talk to him about defensive driving.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I'll have to train him on.
That's right. That's right. Maybe a little winter driving training. So let's talk about Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott's joining us. Phil is a Republican. Let's talk a little bit about some of the activities of this week. Has there been any further advancement of what was in the governor's address in terms of budget cuts?
There certainly has in terms of many issues that are being contemplated. I just want to go back just a minute to the farm show, if we could.
Yeah.
I was there on, I think it was Wednesday night. I was a judge for the Capitol Cook-Off.
Okay.
And it really is a remarkable event, the whole farm show in general. But you really get a sense for all the products that are being made in Vermont. And the Capitol Cook-Off is where the House versus the Senate versus the Agency of Agriculture, and they have all these Vermont products that they have to put together and present and compete. So in this year, I'm proud to say that the Senate, who I was a member of for 10 years before becoming lieutenant governor, had a podium finish once again for the third straight year.
Okay.
A second runner-up, third out of three.
Uh-huh.
But again, the participants really do a great job. And again, highlighting those products, that the one product that came about that was the secret product was from Ray's
Ray's Seafood?
Seafood, right.
Okay.
And it was perch from Lake Champlain. And so they had to prepare that and serve that. So again, it was a great event, a lot of fun. And a lot of the those that participate in the sampling, Kingdom Creamery is one that.
Oh man, that stuff! Yeah,
isn't it great?
Mm-hmm.
I went there.
Did you have the chocolate?
Majestic
one
maple.
There? Okay, all right.
I can't go wrong
with that.
I went there and worked with them for the day at the family farm, and they have like three generations of and the kids are working at it, and they work so hard and 20 hours a day trying to keep the farm going, the creamery, and mm-hmm. so forth. But they make an incredible product and something that should be highlighted. So, again.
So that was part of the Phil Scott working somewhere
sure
for
was.
A day? I
yeah,
mean, wow,
absolutely.
Some of the places you picked,
yeah,
that's
tough.
Yeah,
that was tough. A tough one, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So one scoop for me, one scoop for you.
Pretty much. We had to sample in the afternoon. So we went to the family farm. And went out by the house, and they served up a great meal. But also at the end for dessert, we got to sample all the new ones, and they had a root beer float that they hadn't put out yet, and I think it's out now, which was wonderful. It was
wow.
great. It reminded me of the old A&W root beer floats, if you remember those.
Wow. Have you had any of that Rookie's root beer, any chance, up
I
in the Burlington
not.
Area?
No,
that
I
stuff.
Not.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
down the business.
Well, but while we're talking about that, sugar-sweetened beverage tax, what are you thinking about that?
I don't think much of it, to tell you the truth. I think it's tough to measure. I think a lot of people are confused about what the initiative is as well. Some people say, well, you know, it's not that much money. If you're buying a 20-ounce soda, it's 2 cents, you know, adding another.
Uh-uh.
But that's not the way it works. You know, it's not a sales tax. It's going to be a broader tax amongst all products. And I just, I
so
don't know where.
So it'd be 40 cents.
Yeah.
That too.
But then it's distributed amongst many different products. It doesn't go to that individual.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I mean, theoretically, it would add 40 cents if it's 2 cents an ounce.
Yeah,
not 2 cents.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just where do you stop? We talk about ice cream, and we talk about chips, and we talk about other things that probably aren't good for us if we don't consume them in moderation. And I just think that it's it just opens up the door for many other things, and it falls right in line with my thoughts on the payroll tax as well. Once we open that door just a little bit, where does it stop? And how do we measure the results as well? You know, if it benefits us, and I agree, we need to take better care of ourselves and consume less of some of those things, and exercise more, and prevention and so forth. But how do we measure whether it's successful to take 30, 40 million bucks and put it in there?
Mm-hmm. Right.
What do we get out of it?
Yeah, I wonder what soda would do to your driving on a winter driving day, if that has a negative impact.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, again, there are people, my wife, for example, would say that it's much more dangerous for you to have diet soda than it is to have sugar soda.
Governor said the same thing last week.
Cancer is something she feels and so she bans it from the house. She'd rather have me drink regular soda than
yeah. He
diet.
Was saying he was drinking I don't know how many of them a day, and he stopped and felt better.
I used to drink my share of Diet Pepsi, to be honest, and I didn't. I stopped, but I didn't. I gotta say, I didn't feel any better after I stopped.
Right.
But I probably picked up some other bad habit, like coffee.
I'm not gonna ask you what the replacement beverage was. All right, let's go back here. The original question I asked you, in terms of what the governor's laying out in terms of budget cuts. You hearing any pushback on any of these? What are you hearing?
Yeah, the pushback at this point, we're getting a lot of phone calls and concerns about the PSAPs, the public service announcement. Issue and trying to consolidate and go to two instead of the four, close the one in Derby and Rutland. A lot of concerns about that. My response has been I think that we need to, you know, cuts are tough. It's difficult to find a cut that everyone's going to agree to. And I'm not saying I'm in favor of this one, but I think we need to do our due diligence, look at it, make sure of the necessity and move forward or not. But at least we need to allow the debate to happen.
Mm-hmm. Any suggestions for Whiplash Ash here?
Well, defensive driving training would be important for Senator Ash. I think I can bring him in. Most any morning. Today would be a good time to go out on the course.
Parking lots, yeah.
Course, yeah. We're going to go in a confined course, not take him out on the road, not with me in the vehicle, at least.
All right, we're going to take a short break. Thank you, Phil, for stopping by. Appreciate it. We're broadcasting live this morning at the State House in Montpelier. We're going to bring Senator Ash in here. He's the chair of the Senate Finance Committee. You can join us on the program at any point at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
A little concern on the part of the lieutenant governor about how you're doing after a little nasty car accident he told us about.
Yeah, it was a little brutal. Sometimes you No good deed goes unpunished. I was stopping for a pedestrian in front of Water Inn on UVM campus, and an inattentive driver behind me, who later turned out to be one of the nicest people I've ever met, smashed into me, and that was no fun.
They weren't on a phone or texting or anything, right?
Not that I know of. It was just this young guy who wasn't expecting a student to pop out between two cars on a crosswalk.
Wow. What a way to make friends. All right, let's talk about some of the financial stuff that you're dealing with. I guess the first thing I'm really fascinated to know is what you make of the governor's idea of a payroll tax as a way to try to get at this Medicaid cost shift. Good idea? Bad idea? What do you think?
Complicated idea. One of the things right out of the gate that gives me some caution, meaning that we have to really kick the tires on this concept, is that a payroll tax has a bit of the unfortunate quality of hitting conscientious employers, the ones who are paying higher wages, harder than the people who might be employing the same types of people but paying lower wages. It also would be a payroll tax against payroll for employers who offer insurance, just like it would be for employers who don't offer insurance. So it has that quirky feature, which is that it hits the businesses that are providing insurance and paying the highest wages harder than those who are not. And so in terms of who's contributing to the problem that's trying to be solved, it actually looks to those who aren't causing the problem to be the biggest part of the solution. So that's something that I think we need to more clearly understand before going much further.
Would there be a way to set that up so it's, I'm trying to think if there's a sliding scale, and I don't know which way it would go, though.
Well, you could do lots of things, and you could exempt certain employers. You could have it be a graduated
that's the word I was
assessment.
Looking for.
It could be phased in at different employer sizes. There's a whole bunch of different things, but every legislature should give deference to the administration, no matter what party it's of, and really take a good look at whatever the proposals are. But sometimes the worry I have is that the proposal becomes the default groupthink that everyone then spends all of its time thinking about. And of course, a payroll tax is just one way of addressing this perceived problem of this gap between Medicaid and commercial insurance rates. There are other ways, too, and we should be exploring some of those as well.
Are there ways, though, that could draw down? I mean, one of the attractive things about this proposal, at least on its surface, seems to be that it draws down all this federal money. Are there other ways to raise money that could do that same thing?
Well, that's one of the things that budget geeks understand better than you or I will, but it's not so much that it's the payroll tax that's generating the money. It's how the money is spent that makes it eligible for Medicaid match. So we have a number of revenue streams under current law that draw down federal match. Some of it's the claims assessment, the employer assessment, but it's really about how you spend the money, not how you necessarily raise it. So in that sense, the attractiveness from the administration's proposal is that it reins in $100 million or so of federal money, but it's not because it's a payroll tax that you can enjoy those drawdowns.
Thank you for explaining that. I actually learned something here by 9:20 in the morning.
Wow, that's a good start for you.
So is there, we were talking about this last night at PBS and throwing around some other ideas too, and there was this idea of the employer assessment. Is there a fairer way to get at this from what you were talking about before in terms of hitting high people that are conscientious and paying high wages?
I've been an enthusiast for looking to the employer assessment in general because I believe that some of the large, low-wage employers are the ones who are sticking major costs on the taxpayer. When a large employer has hundreds and hundreds of FTEs and they provide very low wages and no health care benefits, those employees wind up on public programs like Medicaid. Their kids wind up on Dr. Dinosaur and a variety of other public assistance programs, and we wind up assisting them through the tax code with the earned income tax credit. We wind up assisting them through all those healthcare programs. It is those employers, if we're looking at the employer community, who are the biggest contributors to the problem. The employer assessment allows you to focus the solution where the problem is being created. So I think that's somewhere we certainly have to take a look at.
Talking with Senator Tim Ash, you can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Barry. John, how are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing okay. The snow looks like it's sort of a false alarm. Wonderful program you got going this morning. A couple of things. Number one, just most recent comment about employers who fail to provide employees reasonable compensation for their time is basically a topic of what's, you know, broadly known as corporate welfare. And it is an egregious problem. It's been going ongoing and continues to get worse. That'd be great to see legislation or public outcry or anything address that. And back to earlier comments about the sugary tax, which has, of course, been a very hot item. And I was very pleased to hear mention about, well, what about diet soda? I mean, like, spot on. The sugar substitutes are worse for your health than sugar. And to go one step further, there's corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup. And if you look at a lot of these so-called sugary drinks, I don't know the details on this law, and maybe somebody there does. Is that tax applicable to sugar only, as in refined sugar, or does it include high fructose corn syrup or corn syrup, which is as bad for you, or if not worse than sugar? Sugar is actually, as much as it's not very good for you, it's not as bad as some of these other alternatives. Not that I'm defending sugar.
Okay. Let me interrupt, John. Thank you for your call. We'll get Tim's answer to that. Thanks.
Well, on the first issue of what John called corporate welfare, one thing that we did do last year from the Senate Finance Committee, and it did ultimately get signed into law, was required employers whose employees wind up on Medicaid to pay the employer assessment. It raised several million dollars, and that's just on the type of employers that John was describing. That was a unheralded or quiet change, but that few million dollar contribution from those low-wage employers relieves the pressure on the taxpayer to pick up the tab. So that was a very positive thing. In terms of the sugar sweetened beverage tax or the sugary tax or whatever the name of the day is, Senate Finance Committee, at least for one, I think, has been very cool to this subject, in part because of the issues that were raised by both the lieutenant governor and the caller, that deciding exactly what is would be subject to such a tax is, gets complicated pretty fast. You know, I'm looking at Mark's coffee cup right now. I don't want to ask him if he put sugar in it because the public health advocates will go after him. But, you know, if you go to Dunkin' Donuts and you ask for a coffee with no sugar in it, does that mean they're not going to subject it to the tax? But if you ask for a regular at Dunkin' Donuts where they heap in three scoops, now I'm getting, you know, a 40-cent increase in it. You know, all those different workability issues, I think, raise real questions. And one of the principles of the Finance Committee has been that you want taxes that can actually be implemented and understood. And this is one that, up till now, no one has been able to articulate how it could work.
Can you explain to people, you've been talking, and also the Auditor of Accounts has been talking about this idea of ski areas and whether or not really they're paying their fair share. Is that, I guess, is that a fair way to describe it?
Well, there's a long history related to what property taxes they are subject to, the ski areas. And over time, there's been this running debate. There's a small group of Vermonters on the two sides of this debate who have been at war with each other about whether snowmaking equipment and ski lifts and the like should be subject to property tax. And right now, they're exempt, and it costs the state's coffers a couple million bucks a year. The real issue is the larger one that was in the auditor's report about these very long-term leases. They're essentially 100-year leases signed during World War II and the Korean War.
Back when we really wanted to develop an industry.
An industry. People couldn't see ahead 100 years. They didn't understand what it was going to look like to have, instead of a slow, you know, single chair, to have high-speed quads. The amount of revenue that flows through these places, the fact that most of them are real estate companies that happen to have skiing associated with
right.
it. The world has really changed, and I think the leases are relics, in a way, of that time from back in the 40s, 50s, 60s. And so, you know, one of my hopes is that the ski areas will voluntarily open up their leases for renegotiation with forests and parks, not so that the state can, you know, come in with a hammer, but to revisit that fundamental question of balance. You know, for the right to use public lands, we've given them a long-term lease. They do costly investments, but the relative share of the proceeds is really the question, and I'm not sure that the leases were established with today's ski industry in mind.
So is the idea that you threaten to tax some of their other equipment to try to bring them to the table?
I think some people would probably find that an attractive strategy. I think I'd much rather give the ski areas, and there's seven of them on public lands, not all of them, but the seven ski areas that are on public lands, I would like them to come forward voluntarily so that we have a thoughtful, unhurried negotiation over time with forests and parks. Other people are looking to scoop money, and that shouldn't really be the driving concern.
Okay. But it sounds like if they don't come forward, you might want to go after their other equipment.
Well, legislators talk about this year to year. It's one of those tax expenditures that's very poorly understood. And so as people try and figure out how to raise new revenues, that one always stands out. It gets debated every year, and the status quo has held now for, I think, 12 years. So, but again, the point is striking the right balance between the share of proceeds for the use of public lands, not about trying to fill budget holes by scooping up $2 million from this industry or that.
But fair to say you see that balance, is it tipping too much to the ski areas today?
Well, I think, you know, the Commissioner of Forests and Parks himself said that he'd love to be able to renegotiate because things have changed. And I think that means that there probably would be additional revenues to the state for the use of those lands. You know, I'm not an expert in what's in the seven different leases, but, you know, that the opportunity to revisit those questions is what's important to me, not the end outcome.
Let's go to Sheldon. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning. Wouldn't the payroll tax raise the property tax and raise health care costs, because taxpayers would have to pay for the payroll tax for teacher salaries, and health care costs would go up because our hospitals are some of the biggest employers in the state, and we would have to pay the payroll tax for them also. So wouldn't they have to raise their price? So have people considered this part of the raising this tax?
All right. Let me ask the senator. Thank you for your call, Ruth.
Well, that's a good question, Ruth. And the short answer is that the legislature is really just getting a formal proposal from the administration. So we haven't been able to explore those squishy issues in terms of the overall economic impact. My concern, in part, is that while, and we think about health, this proposal has been pitched as if things are a closed loop. You raise the payroll tax, it brings in money, and then within that closed loop, you reduce premiums on commercial insurance rates. But I don't really see the Vermont healthcare industry, which is a $5 plus billion industry, as a closed loop. So my worry, in addition to some of the concerns you just raised, Ruth, are that the costs will really just get squished out to the side, and we'll see them in hospital budgets, we'll see them in other out-of-pocket expenses. So figuring out how the proposal fits into the larger interest in reducing overall healthcare expenditures is something that we've got to really, really think about.
Well, the governor contends that you could get the Green Mountain Care Board to do this in a way that people would directly feel it.
Well, when that case is made persuasively, I'll nod my head in agreement, but at present, we haven't really seen those details.
So would it be fair, how would I characterize your feeling about this payroll tax? Skeptical? What would be the correct, accurate term to use?
I think, you know, I respond to this proposal the way I would of any $90 million tax proposal, which is to say we must be convinced to even put it on the table. And right now, you know, a year ago, people weren't saying the biggest issue we've got to deal with in healthcare is closing the so-called cost shift. Now this year, it seems the most fashionable issue to deal with. So there's a couple issues. One is we have to determine if this is our primary problem to solve in Vermont's healthcare system, which wasn't what people were saying for the last 3-4 years. It wasn't what motivated Act 48. And then if we believe this is the single largest problem that deserves our attention this year and next year, then we have to decide if this is the appropriate way to close it.
One of the other revenue sources the governor talked about in his budget address is this closing this loophole on taxes from the deducting your taxes from the previous year off of this year's tax bill, state and local. Is it state and local? I've seen it. Okay, so it's state and local. I've seen it referred to only as state, but I thought it was both.
Well, it's state and local income taxes. Of course, there are no local income taxes in Vermont, so it's called the state and local tax deduction, but really it's a state income tax deduction.
Okay, so it's state income taxes, it's not local property taxes.
Correct.
All right.
And so right now, about 90,000 Vermont taxpayers receive some benefit from this deduction. The grand total is something in the order of $15 million a year. So,
which seemed like a lot.
Well, it is, and it's been baked into our tax code for forever. I mean, and so it's not so much a loophole as one of these quirky features of our tax code that people have just become accustomed to. If we were starting from scratch, we would never have this deduction baked in. We would have had lower rates instead. But the problem is now you've got taxpayers who have become accustomed to enjoying this benefit. So
right.
At the same time, the property taxes are going to go up and healthcare costs go up yet again. We'd be giving $150 on average hit to the 90,000 taxpayers who pay this. So it's all has to be viewed. You know, Vermonters don't think of themselves as state and local income tax deduction recipients. They think of themselves as Vermonters, right?
Right.
They care about their total
right.
out-of-pocket costs, you know, of all sorts. And so we're going to compare that. If we need to raise revenue, we will compare that to other methods of raising roughly the equivalent amount. In the past, as you know, the Senate Finance Committee wondered why Vermont has an interest in subsidizing mortgages for out-of-state properties. You know, do you solve $15 million hole that way? No, but that might be the best first place to look and not increasing $150 cost for Vermonters who are already facing these other increases.
What kind of money could you get from that idea?
Well, depending on how you structured it, I believe the Senate voted and passed a proposal in 2013 that would have capped the amount of mortgage interest that one could claim at, I believe, it was either 10 or 12,000. My memory's escaping me for the moment, but it raised something on the order of $5 million. And there are other approaches you can take to making changes in our tax code that over time will be viewed as very reasonable and fair ones that could either have short-term revenue gain implications or could be used to lower rates for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Pardon the simplicity of this question. Is it going to be necessary for your committee to raise money this year?
Well, it's not a simple question, so you don't need forgiveness. The Budget Committee is primarily, and I have to say, the Senate in some way benefits from the House having to go first on this bill, but the fact that this governor, who has been so hesitant to suggest a single penny of tax increase over the 4 years of his gubernatorial tenure, has come up this year with $60 million or so of taxes, to me says that it will be almost impossible to get out of here in May without some new revenue. The question is really a matter of scale. And I've always worked very well with Jane Kitchell on the Appropriations Committee, and our attitude has always been, you do the best job you can do on the budget writing, and then when you tell us if we need to do anything to support that budget, that's when we will start evaluating things on their, you know, on the grounds of fairness.
Do you envision at all taking up this pot bill, which might have some money revenue source in it?
Well, I've told the Senate's primary sponsors and supporters that if they've got majority support in the Senate and there's a sense that the bill will move through the legislature, then we would take it up. But, of course, we would be the second committee in the Senate to look at it after Judiciary. I don't really think it would be a good use of time if the Senate's not ready to proceed or is enthusiastic about entertaining it.
Okay. Can you just tell me, generally speaking here, what else you're working on? I remember last year you worked a lot on a piece of tax legislation that you must have been totally frustrated, spent a lot of time on it, and really nothing happened at the end. So what are you working on this year, and I guess are you keeping that experience in mind?
Well, the Finance Committee has jurisdiction which reaches so far. I mean, it has health care, it has education finance, it has all the things in the fee bills. It has banks, utilities, credit unions, insurance. It has a whole range of topics. So we're busy, on all fronts.
Let's talk about education. I mean, what are you anticipating is going to happen with that?
Well, I attended a meeting in Williamstown the other night with probably about 50 school board members from the Central Vermont area, and it's amazing. All of them were very hardworking people who give a tremendous amount of their time to improving schools and outcomes for kids and trying to keep budgets in line. But even amongst 50 people who are all engaged in the same with the same spirit and same effort. You hear varying approaches to how we should do things. So one of the things that my goal is with the Finance Committee and our piece of this equation is not to, you know, dicker around with one-year solutions and one-year tweaks to the way we do things, but rather to view our work as mapping out the next 15, 20 years so that we have stable education funding policies looking out. Right now, we do have a very dysfunctional situation, and I'll give an example. Rochester High School is often the poster child for small high schools that maybe shouldn't exist anymore. There's only a handful of people in each grade. People say that it doesn't offer a lot of educational opportunity, that it's really costly, although the Rochester people say it's a community hub and it's a very important institution. So they have been part of a regional merger and are receiving incentives from the state to do that. So that they're doing everything in that regard that the state is encouraging them to do and that the governor is encouraging them to do. On the other hand, there's a proposal to eliminate the small schools grant,
right,
which would essentially wipe out a quarter of their budget. So right now we have these completely contradictory messages we send. We say, you know, get your act together and get stable for the future, but we might pull out all the tools that would allow you to succeed in doing that. So I think we're going to try and untangle that and have a more coherent strategy.
Mm-hmm. So do you see a big radical change coming here with a formula?
Well, a big radical change, if a big radical change was developed in 1 year, I have a prediction, which is that we will probably make things dramatically worse than what people are complaining about today. And so I hope
that... Is that possible?
Well, people are voting for school budgets, so the question of just how, I mean, I'm not, I believe there are problems with our current system, but throwing it entirely out could very easily cause major problems. And one of the things is some of the lead proponents of dramatic changes in the way we raise the money, they're really not talking about cost issues. What they're saying is we want to change who pays and how much. And you always have to wonder why some groups are motivated to do that, because if it's a closed loop system and a certain set of Vermonters are going to be paying, if all you're doing is changing who pays and how much, it means that some people win, some people lose. Our real issue, in my opinion, is an overall spending issue, so that everyone's paying a little too much. That's where I'd hope that we would get it right.
Last question. You know, I know you're aware of this extraordinary concentration of wealth at the top end of the pyramid. Is there going to be any sort of attempt on your committee's part to get at that?
Well, Mark, you can't boycott participation in the U.S. economy. And what's happening in Vermont is exactly what's happening across the country, where we hear about all of the gains in the economy as it comes back going to people at the top. Vermont is no different. Most of that income is from capital gains and non-wage income. So the dilemma is communicating to Vermonters in realistic ways that the so-called wealthy in Vermont is a very small group. They happen to have a tremendous share of the total wealth and income in the state, but they're not a lot of them. And so, you know, some groups say we need to solve health care, so let's tax those rich people. Some people say we need to deal with education finance and make it more affordable for middle class and lower income people, so let's go after those rich people. Some people say we need to shore up the general fund by going after the rich people, but you can't, you know, you can only get fleeced 100% one time, not three times. So we have larger problems in terms of sustainable funding of all these different sectors of our economy, and I don't quite know how you do a Vermont solution to deal with the concentration of income. It becomes very hard. A lot of this income isn't coming from Vermont activities. It's coming from stocks and things and going on in the national economy. So I think we're going to continue to try and ferret out inappropriate and unfair tax advantages, which may have some effect on people at the higher end disproportionately, but the goal won't be to sock the wealthy. It will be to establish a more fair and reasonable and understandable tax code.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mark.
Safe driving. That's Senator Tim Ashey's chair of the Senate Finance Committee. We'll take a short break. 244-1777, our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. Back after this.
This is Roger Williams from 802 Toyota. On behalf of our entire staff, I would like to thank all of our sales, service, and parts customers for your loyalty and partnership in 2014. We know you expect the best service and prices from us, and that's what keeps you coming back to 802 Toyota for all of your automotive needs. We welcome your feedback, good or otherwise, and we thank you for making our service department the top-ranked Toyota dealer in Vermont for customer satisfaction. Our climate-controlled service drive-through and our complimentary shuttle service make it easy to keep your car truck in top condition. We stock a huge inventory of pre-owned Toyota cars and trucks, including a great selection of Toyota certified vehicles. Great service, great prices, and our drive to be the best are why you should come in to check us out. We're easy to find. Just click on 802toyota.com, call 844-802-TOYOTA to speak to a member of our helpful customer service team, or drive to exit 7 off I-89. We're just 2 minutes off the exit. 802 Toyota, driving to be Vermont's number one Toyota dealer.
Hi folks, this is Jerry Booth. In 1946, when my family started Booth Brothers Dairy, they knew the farmers and where their milk came from. In today's world, everyone is concerned about where their food supply comes from. At Booth Brothers, it's the same as it was in 1946. 27 local farm families who supply us with quality milk, produced right here in central Vermont. So ask yourself, do you know where your milk comes from? Remember, the next time you're in the dairy aisle, reach for Booth Brothers.
RB Technologies on Route 14 East Montpelier has been creating and supporting thoughtfully designed, custom-crafted computer networks for their clients since 1997. Here's Peter Timponi from the Vermont College of Fine Arts.
Ruben and all of his crew have been working with us over the last 2.5 years. We recently had some electrical damage in the building, which took down the entire network, and they were in helping us the next day. It was a real, real pleasure working with them. It helped us out a ton. Here at Vermont College, we're a small operation, our IT department. We have two people, so it's often hard sometimes to find the right bit of knowledge that we might need. So I have actually called Ruben before and spoke with them about, you know, things that I'm trying to do, things that I'm trying to accomplish, and they've been very helpful in guiding us along the way. Friendly, courteous, knowledgeable are the first three words that come to my head when I think about Ruben and everyone there, and they're a great, great crew.
RB Technologies cares about their customers. Call them at 223-4448 or online at rbtechvt.com. RB Technologies, efficiency through technology.
Attention Aetna Medicare Part D members. Inaccurate information regarding in-network pharmacies was provided during open enrollment that may have misled you when choosing a plan. Due to this, Aetna members are being offered a special enrollment period to choose a new Part D plan. If you're an affected beneficiary who would like to keep Kenny Drugs as your pharmacy provider, call 1-800-MEDICARE today to take advantage of this special enrollment period. Personal care, local commitment. Kenny Drugs. Experience the difference.
With the new year comes a few choices that you have to take care of. One of those is getting your car inspected, and Formula Nissan can help in a big way. Jack Castellaneta, you've got something really special for anyone that needs an inspection sticker.
We know what a pain it can be getting your Vermont State Inspection done. That's why we're offering a $9.95 Vermont State Inspection on any vehicle.
And this is not just Nissan cars and trucks, Jack. You'll give this $9.95 deal to anyone, any make, any model.
Absolutely. Let our factory-trained technicians do your state inspection while you wait in our comfortable customer lounge. And we'll have you back on the road in no time. No pain, no problems, all for just $9.95.
One New Year item you can scratch off your to-do list. The Vermont State Inspection. And it's easier at Formula Nissan on the Barry Montpelier Road next to Pizza Hut.
Just $9.95 for your Vermont State Inspection. No appointment necessary, just stop by. And we'll show you how easy it is to do business at Formula Nissan.
All right, we're back at the State House in Montpelier. Thinking maybe I may have had a scheduling snafu here with the commissioner of the Department of Children and Families, or perhaps he did. I'm not sure which, but in any case, we'll get Ken Schatz on the program here at some point. But one of the beautiful things about the Vermont legislature is there's just news walking by everywhere you go. And let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Representative Jim Condon from Colchester.
How's... Great to be here, Mark, and happy to pinch hit for Ken Schatz.
All right. So let's see. Should we talk about taxing questions, or maybe we should talk about... So what did you think of this report that came out that really questioned whether or not the department was putting the focus on, putting too much focus on getting families back together?
you know, getting families back together is a great ideal, but every situation is different. Sometimes you don't want to get the families back together just for the safety of the children. So, you know, really it is a question. They need to have investigators on the ground working with these folks a lot more than they've been able to do. Again, it's a question of resources. How can you best do that? And so I know that, you know, Senator Sears and others are trying to put together legislation to try to help address this. And I think eventually it'll get support. I guess it needs to be tweaked a little bit. DCF has raised issues with it.
You're right.
So
right.
We'll see.
And, you know, I was a little surprised, Jim. I was looking at they hired 10 new people, these 10 new positions at DCF. But really none of them appeared to be on-the-ground people who are going to go out visiting families. It was, management positions.
Yeah.
Some other administrative positions, maybe, you know, that will free up other people, presumably. But I don't know. I thought it was going to be 10 caseworkers.
Yeah, I hope that you're right about that, that, you know, hiring these back office, you know, workers may help free some people up to get on the street and actually find out what's going on for the help protect, you know, the kids, which is what this is all about.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I hope you're right about that. I don't know the answer if that's actually the case or not.
Yeah. And this whole connection with the opiate addiction, a little bit of a surprise to me that there's this strong connection there between people who are abusing heroin and abusing their children, I guess.
I guess we shouldn't be surprised that there's a situation like that. You know, for someone to hurt their own child, they have to be mentally screwed up, obviously. And I think if you're hooked on opiates, you're probably screwed up.
Yeah.
And so,
well, mission number one is that. So
yeah.
And mission number one is probably not your kids.
Yeah. So what else you want to talk about?
Let's talk about some tax stuff. We were just talking with Senator Tim Ash because you are on the House Ways and Means Committee, and I know you've been really quite focused on education funding, and it's been a real issue for you. So where do you see House Ways and Means going on education funding or spending?
Well, the first thing that's going to happen is that the House Education Committee, and this is new this year, and I think it's a good idea, they're going to be vetting the various proposals for reform of education funding. I'm going to be joining Representative Oliver Olson in presenting a couple alternatives that we've come up with.
Mm-hmm.
One is one that I introduced last year, or reintroduced last year, that Representative Olson had introduced 4 years ago now. And that would set a much lower and flat across-the-board homestead property tax rate. Much lower than what it is now, coupled with progressive income tax. I hate to say it, but that's if we want to reduce the property tax, we're going to have to pick it up somewhere else. This would get rid of the whole income sensitivity system that we have, because in and of itself it'd be income sensitive.
Okay.
All the way. It would also get rid of the property tax rebate, prebate credit, because people would be paying, getting a break on their property tax right up front. So that is one proposal. There are implementation issues. You'd want to be able to help people set up withholding for this statewide education income tax. You need obviously the forms that would come along and be part of your state income tax filing. So there are a lot of questions still to be resolved. Do you use AGI, federal AGI,
mm-hmm.
adjusted gross income, or Vermont taxable income, as we do now?
Mm-hmm.
There's good argument to change it, which most states use AGI. We'll have to take a look at that.
So how?
And the other one, just quickly, is based on an idea that the late great Greg Clark had some years ago, which I co-sponsored with him, which would give everyone in the state a $100,000 exemption on the value of your property, and then calculate your property tax after that exemption's been applied.
Okay.
That exemption would become smaller the more over the average that your school district spends on education. So the more your district spends, the less of an exemption you're going to get. So that would help, I think, provide relief for property taxpayers and also provide an incentive, I think, for people to keep an eye on exactly what their school district spending is.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be, I think, simpler to implement.
So go to that middle one here. If you were to lower the property taxes significantly and raise money over here on the income tax side,
yeah,
how do you prevent 5 years from now the slow increase again of property taxes back up to this critical point that they are today?
Well, you know, that's a good question. No legislature can, you know, commit a future legislature to any particular action.
Yeah.
We just have to hope and pray that that doesn't happen. When we set a flat property tax rate, if a legislature in the future wanted to change that, I think there would be some howling.
Right.
You know, to prevent the situation you're just talking about, getting back basically to where we are now.
But hope and pray is not, I think, what people out there are looking for, the lock solid deal.
Well, we can't commit a future legislature to doing, you know, what anything. It's completely up to them. Each one's a new body.
Do you think something's going to happen on this year, next year?
I think we'll see some action this year. And once education decides what they want to do, and Dave Sharp, who'd been the ranking member on Ways and Means, is now the chairman of education.
Right, right. With the express idea of having him go over there for this reason.
Exactly. Yeah. Then we'll get it in Ways and Means, what they come up with, and what, you know, they're comfortable with.
Senator Ash sounded very skeptical of this whole payroll tax.
I am too. I'm also skeptical.
Because why? What is it?
Well, first of all, we're putting a brand new tax on 13,000 small businesses in Vermont. Is that good for the economy? No, it's not. Once this tax is created, when will that go away? Chances are, never. Will it continue to increase? Again, we can't predict what future legislatures will do, but I would guess that we'd probably see it grow. So I am very skeptical of it. There's also, it's a little hazy exactly if the cost shift would actually produce the intended result of driving down premiums. That's really not that clear that would actually happen. Under the Constitution, we cannot enact a new tax unless the purpose for which is clear and the results would be better for the common good than if the tax had not been created.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually a constitutional question.
Wow. I didn't know that requirement was there.
Yeah.
Okay. Here, let me have you put these on.
Okay.
244-1777, our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Waterbury. Greg, good morning.
Good morning. I just have a comment and also a question for our representative.
Sure.
I've been listening, you know, recently on the radio about how the state has a shortfall in the budget and how there's problems with funding the medical and the education. And the solution seems to be everyone's trying to find new taxes for the ski areas, taxes for the out-of-state landowners, taxes for the one percenters. But no one's talking about jobs. And mm-hmm. I watch TV at night and I see New York State courting jobs. And then I also see that 60 companies left Vermont last year. So it seems to me that if there are jobs in the state, then those other problems would take care of themselves. And why is there a bigger concern in Montpelier to bring business and jobs to Vermont so that we have taxpayers and we can afford all these programs that you guys are trying to cut right now?
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, if we had 60, 100, 300 new businesses move in, I think it'd be great. And the income taxes generated by that, the corporate income taxes generated by that, would certainly take a lot of pressure off the budget. And the other thing that's going to happen, I'm afraid, is that we're going to see job cuts in state government when this comes down to the end. It's going to be, I think, a difficult task to try to raise $90 to $100 million in new revenues without having, you know, sharing some of the burden with by having job rescissions. So maybe that won't happen, but that's my guess.
Let's go to Corinth. Forbes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
I'd be very much interested in what his feelings are with regards to the educational funding. Who really has the investment in the educational process?
Who has the investment in the educational process?
Does everyone or just a certain few?
Well, the way it works now is that it's those people who actually go out and vote on town meeting day that have the investment. We had, 13% participation in town meeting day, something like that. That's pretty bad.
Was it really that bad?
Yeah, it was very low.
Okay, wow.
And I think more people should be invested in it and actually understand. One of the problems is our current system is so Byzantine that it's nearly impossible to understand. You're voting on a budget that's before you in your local school district. You have no idea how that's actually going to affect your tax liability. There's really no way of knowing that because there's so many twisted factors in there.
Well, budgets don't mean anything anymore. This is my, you know, revelation that it's all about per pupil spending. So really what ought to be on the ballot is per pupil spending, because that's the increase.
That's been proposed. That idea has been proposed before, and it actually makes sense.
What about this, the governor's idea of closing this loophole on the previous year's state income taxes?
Again, that's not real crazy about that one either. We'll have to see on that one. You know, we're studying what other states do. It looks like, you know, Vermont is more of an exception right now by allowing that deduction through.
What's the big problem with closing that then?
Well, because you're creating a tax increase on people. The average, I think, was $180 or something like that.
Yeah.
And it varies from, you know, $140 up to, you know, $450 that someone would have to pay in new taxes. So, yeah, we have to look at that one very carefully. I hear the roll call vote going.
Yeah, do it.
I got one quick comment, though, on the Fast Play lottery.
Okay.
They say this is new revenue, so it shouldn't have to go into the education fund.
Right.
I'm sorry. It's lottery. It should be going into the education fund. End of story.
Have to change all those ads. Otherwise, all
right.
Money proceeds. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Jim Condon. Representative from Colchester, member of the House Ways and Means Committee. We're broadcasting live as we do on Fridays from the State House in Montpelier. Coming up next hour, we'll chat with Governor Shumlin. He joins us coming up at about 10:30. We'll also check in with our White House crew to begin hour number two. Moment of your time for our friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for outstanding internet service, make it our friends at GMAVT.net. How easy are they to reach? One toll-free call away, and that's at 1-888-321-0815. 1-888-321-0815. If you want to take a peek at their webpage before you give them a call, you might have many of your questions answered ahead of time. And you can do that by going to gmavt.net. They're a division of Waitsfield and Champlain Valley Telecom. Very much encourage you to, if you're in their service area, speak with them about combining your services into one handy-dandy package. Again, it's 1-888-321-0815 and on the web at gmavt.net. Coming up Monday on the program, we'll be joined by Paul Costello. We'll be talking about this concept of the working lands here in Vermont, preview conference that's going to be coming up in February as well. Keep your dial right here. We got another hour to go. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News coming your way next.